Okay, good afternoon. It is Tuesday, April 13th and 12:40, and we're doing Chem 12B. We're talking about a game plan for this lecture, where we want to go, and we're thinking that we're going to do the all-in-one types of problems. So rather than go through more patterns in mass spec, which aren't super helpful, and besides of which we've already talked quite a bit about, what we haven't started doing yet is taking and how do I attack a problem that is a complete unknown? I don't know what the molecular formula is. I only have mass spec, IR, and both carbon and proton NMR. Mary, what is going on over at your place?
Sorry.
Don't be sorry. I love the little ones. That's perfect. You can keep that camera on. I'll tell you a quick story over the summer. I had a Chem 3 class. It was a very intensive Chem 3 class, and there was a ton of parents in that Chem 3 class. And so we had three families with babies, and two of the guys who wore their babies in a baby Bjorn in the front the entire time that we were lecturing. And then we had a couple of moms in there too. And at one point, one of the moms wanted to key up to ask a question. And she keyed up to activate her microphone. And all you could hear was the baby screaming in the background. The baby was just going off, was so unhappy. And she let go of that microphone instantly. And she's like, nope. And I'm like, come on. I said, everybody else has babies. Just key it up. Ask the question. Let's do this. It was perfectly fine. So so that's what we did. It was the baby class. It was awesome. So yeah, babies are always welcome. Or small children are always welcome.
She loves being on the camera for sure. It's
perfect. All smiles. Excellent. Okay, so let's go ahead and start some of the all-in-one problems. Now, these are a little bit more complicated to do, honestly, because I have to cheat a little bit and not show you all the data, and I don't have these all processed. So let's pick a problem and I'll try and pull spectra in. Let me start doing that real quick. So it's going to take me a minute to get this together. I'll start a new page and I will go and grab the first spectrum. Let me think about, because I haven't tried to do this on the iPad just yet. And once I figure out a way to make this work. Sources. No, wrong one.
Hey, Jason.
Yeah.
I have a very random question while you're doing stuff.
Go for it.
So remember when we all went into lockdown that first time last March?
Yes.
I'm pretty sure like I still have, I don't know, either a lock and some lab goggles there. Are we ever gonna like get those back, or should I just get new ones for whenever we go back?
Outstanding question. To my knowledge, what the department told what the division told the departments was that the departments were not allowed to get rid of all of that stuff. And I think that they specifically told biology that they weren't even allowed to remove the locks off the lockers. And so biology still has all those locks and all the materials that were in the lockers. Chemistry took another track. And I think chemistry did not ask permission and simply cut the locks off in order to open all of the lockers. And they may have removed the materials. So if they were stored in a chemistry locker and they were on the 1A or 1B side, they're probably gone. If they were in the Chem 12 area in either Zaruba's class or my class, then they might still be accessible. I'm not sure. I would have to ask. So the answer to that question is, I'm not entirely sure, but if they're Chem 1A or Chem 1B, they're probably gone.
That's unfortunate, but thank you.
I'm sorry. not exactly what you wanted to hear.
It's all right. They're like $20. I'll live.
Okay. I apologize. The hard part was we just didn't know when we were coming out of lockdown in order to be able to get them back to their respective places that they were supposed to be. And the lab techs were working independently of the instructors. So it wasn't as if they could go back to the instructors and ask them to coordinate getting those back to the students. That was part of the problem. All right, I'm almost set here. I'm got two more spectra to bring in. The whole thing of this is that I'm trying not to totally give the problem away. I need the mass spec, that's the last thing I need. Okay. When I do this in class, what I do is I mute the screen for a minute, cover up what I want to cover up, and then bring the projector back online. And it's a little bit harder on something like an iPad where everything is, oh, come on, you better be all in here. Oh, it did, it dropped them all right on top of each other. Classic, and not what I wanted. Okay, I'm good now. All right, so what I want to call your attention to as I start this, let me go ahead and start a screen share. And I want to remind you about the rubric that I have up, because the rubric has made a huge difference in how students go through and work these problems. So going back here, there is a spectroscopy rubric off this link. The PDF, oh, is not easy to read. Let's go with the HTML. This rubric has the different components in it. It has how we deal with mass spec, how we deal with IR, how we deal with proton NMR and carbon NMR, and then the overall analysis. It's a 56-point rubric, and basically you use it like a checkbox. You go through and each time you complete something, you check it off so that you don't miss anything. And that as you're checking those things off, even if you're getting in the accomplished zone on most things, you can still wind up with an A on this rubric, in the way that the rubric works out, the way the points work out, because accomplished is 3.4 points, mastered is 4 points, adequate is 3 points. And so, and most of the points are based on process, not on accuracy, if that makes sense. In terms of analysis, you know, if we go, the properly proposed structure is analyzed correctly and you get the right answer, that right answer is essentially the difference between that right answer and a wrong answer, if everything else is done correctly, is only 0.6 points out of 56 points total. So you can get the answer completely wrong, do the entire process right, and still get an outstanding score on this, because I recognize that I'm trying to teach by process. And the more you get the process correct, the more likely you are to get the answer correct. And yet we still are learning and you can still make mistakes. And so the rubric allows for that. So what we'll do is we'll use the rubric in addition to going through and picking out the pieces of data. And I think what I'll do is I'll bring the rubric in at the end of this problem, and then we'll show everything that we did in ticking it all off and how to use that rubric as a guide. But for right now, let's go over here and let's start with our first piece of data, which is the IR. And I'm going to move each of these other pieces of data down to different pages so that we'll have one piece of data on each page. Just drop them all down there for right now. So here is the IR. For this compound. And within the IR, what we want to do is we want to just look at it and get an idea of what functional groups might be within this compound. So in looking at this, are there any functional groups that stand out to you in this compound? I'm seeing hydroxyl, I'm seeing carboxylic acid, I'm seeing carbonyl. All of those are correct. So sort of like cluing you in on what my brain sees, I see this piece first of all, which is this peak here, which is all jagged and has this distinct shape to it. This is the carboxylic acid. So this is what we, or what I refer to as sort of like the shaggy beard type thing. And it has this oftentimes characteristic shape to it. This is indeed the carboxylic acid and is the OH part of that carboxylic acid. These guys here, punching through that, are the carbon hydrogen stretch. And then along with that, there is also a carbonyl, which sits over here, which is presumably part of that carboxylic acid. So this guy here at 1717 is what we see as the carbonyl peak. And that would be the stretch associated with the carbonyl of the carboxylic acid, if that were to be true. Okay, so what I see here that I would list is 30067, because that's what's labeled, which is the carboxylic acid OH stretch. And then I have 1717, which is the carbonyl. And that's how I would label it out. Now, which spectroscopy piece we start with, whether we start with the IR or we start with the mass spec, really makes no difference. You can start with NMR if you want to. It's a matter of how you like to work through the spectrum and what it is that you like to look at. And so I always like to look at the IR just because it gives me an idea of what I'm looking for in the other spectrum before I even start. So that's kind of where I go, and I just glance at that IR really quickly. All right, let's grab the mass spec next, I think. And let's look at mass spec. Additional page. With all these images, sometimes it doesn't like to give me new pages. Okay, so now with mass spec. Out. What we want to do is we want to go through and we want to label the peaks first of all. See what we're seeing in here. So let's choose blue to label this out. This peak, which is 152, I'm going to cite this as the molecular ion peak at 152. Now, this one has several peaks. There is the 152. There is 154. This is 155. And inside here is 153. And I'm seeing that these peaks are doubling up. 135, 137. 107, 109. And there's a doubling of about 50-50. So yes, Keegan, chloride of bromide is an isotope effect. Now remember the difference between chloride and bromide, that chloride usually has a 3-to-1 ratio if it's a chloride in the doubling of the peaks 2 units apart. Bromide has more closely a 50-50 2 units apart. In the terms of the way that they're, so these are both 2 units apart. But this is 3-to-1, and this is 1-to-1 that I expect. And so what I'm seeing in this is I'm seeing that there is a bromide in this compound. So we'll say isotope effect 1-to-1 ratio, 2 units apart at multiple locations. And that's going to indicate that there is a bromide that is in this molecule. Okay, the other thing that we list is that we have the molecular ion peak, which is equal to 152. That 152 should allow us then to be able to go through and to figure out a formula for this compound. So we should be able to do the rule of 13 now and try to go through and do this compound. So the rule of 13, we would take 152 go ahead and divide it by 13. That's going to be 11. That's 143. So that's going to be 9 left over. So I'm expecting C11H 11 plus 9. So my formula is going to be C11H20. And then I'm going to have to get that bromide in there. And if I'm expecting to get the bromide in there, then I need to add in a bromide and I need to subtract some carbon and hydrogen equivalent of that bromide. So bromide is 79 and 81, and we would use the 79, the lower one, because we used the lower numbered 152. If we use the 154 as our molecular ion, then I would want to use a bromide 81 to correspond to that. All right, so at 79, we would use the rule of 13, again, to figure out an equivalent for the bromide. So 79 divided by 13 equals 6. 6 times 13 equals 78. So I'm 1. So this is going to be equal to C6H7 is what a bromide is equal to. So I'll take 6 away. That's going to give me C5H. Subtract 7 is going to give me 13 Br. But then we also saw in the IR that this molecule had a likely carboxylic acid. So we should also introduce 2 oxygens into this in order to give me other formulas. So let's go ahead and add in an oxygen and subtract the CH4 equivalent. So that's going to take me down to C4H9OBr. And I'll do that one more time to come out with C3H5O2Br. Make sense so far? And how I'm getting to the formula? And then once I get that formula, I should check it. So let's just check and see that C3H5O2Br, that's going to be 3 times 12 plus 5 plus 32 plus 79, 152. So that did work out, and we've got 152, and that is the correct formula, or a correct formula for what we're seeing here for our molecular ion peak. Now, the other thing that we can do is we can calculate some of these common losses. So sometimes what I like to, particularly to the base peak, that this is the base peak, So the base peak to 73, 152 minus 152 minus 73 equals 79. That's the loss of the bromide itself. And we can then go and look at maybe some of these losses in here just to see what else is going on. 152 minus 135, that's minus 17. So that's 16 plus 1, that's an oxygen and a hydrogen, that's minus an OH. 152 minus 107, that's minus 45. And 135 minus 107 is minus 28. Minus 28 is an oxygen, which is 16, plus a carbon, which is 12. So this is minus CO, and this is minus CO2H at 45. So that is the carboxylic acid that is fragmenting off in different ways. We can see the loss of the OH, then loss of carbon monoxide, or loss of the entire carboxylic acid group from that, and loss of the bromide. So there's lots of different things in there that are giving me some ideas as to what's going on in this molecule. And I don't need to go and do that for everything. I'm just picking the ones that are giving me the two bromides to see what's losing, being lost while the bromide is still attached. And then I found the one where the bromide is lost. So all of that is kind of nice to be able to check and see. All right, after doing that, I would say that it's time to move on. Oh, except maybe we have a formula. We should do units of unsaturation while we have that formula. So this is something that I always want to see. Units of unsaturation. And so we've got C3H5O2Br. Remember, oxygens don't change the number of units of unsaturation. So, but the bromide does. The bromide takes a place of a hydrogen. Two ways to treat it. I can either treat the bromide separately and subtract one from the number of hydrogens, or I can treat the bromine as a hydrogen and just include it in my count. Both ways work. So at C3, I should have H2 times 3 is 6 plus 2, 7, 8. I should have 8. Minus 1 for the bromide. That means that I should be down at 7. I've got 5. So 5, 7 minus 5. Gives me 2 divided by 2. This equals 1 unit. And that would be consistent with a carboxylic acid, with 1 unit of unsaturation. Okay, next step. Let's get rid of this guy. Actually move him onto the next page. This is our proton NMR, 500 megahertz. Things that are coming out in here. The splitting patterns, I didn't show you what the patterns are, but they are both triplets. So you're gonna have to take my word for it at the moment that each of these are triplets. Maybe at the end, I'll go back and I'll show you. But then this one out here that exchanges, that is looking like it's almost 10, let's call it 9.9, and exchanges. That exchanges is the carboxylic acid. And then let's make our table. So we have HNMR. We have the number of environments. This guy here is solvent. It's not integrated. So how many chemical environments am I looking at? Just the three. Good. And then I've got, looks like 3.0. I'm going to call it 3.7 and 9.9. So these are my parts per million. My integration values are 2, 2, and 1. My multiplicity, this is a triplet, triplet, singlet, presumably. Number of neighbors. For a triplet, how many neighbors do I have? Just two. Yeah, I'm seeing fingers being held up and some accounting. For a singlet, there aren't any. And so for the assignments now, what I get out of the assignment is that this one that exchanges, oh, and this is good here. Not only is this a singlet, but it's good to put exchanges. Oh, come on. So that we've got that in there. The assignment for this guy is the proton on the carboxylic acid. But what is the assignment for maybe this first one at 3.0? What would we assign that to? Electron withdrawing group with a CH2 on it. I like it. And what about the second one at 3.7? Same thing, but closer. Or same thing, but stronger electron withdrawing group, perhaps. Okay, and notice that these two are the only things that are here, that these two groups must be connected together, splitting each other. They must be neighbors of each other. And there's something that's missing. There's something that we don't have at all. There's a big donut, terminal CH3 group. There is no CH3. So when we go back and look at this, we have integrations of two, integrations of two, integrations of one. There's no methyls in here. There's nothing integrating for three. Alkene, but remember that we already have one unit of unsaturation. So with no methyl groups, Br, yes. And what could be the other terminating group? So Br could be terminating one side. What could be terminating the other side? The OH, not just the OH, but the carboxylic acid. There we go. Okay. So what we're seeing out of this is we're seeing that we're getting a CH2 connected to a CH2. And on one side, it's possible that we have a bromide. And on the other side, it's possible that we have the carboxylic acid. And that's what this is starting to look like. Let's check it with the carbon NMR and see if the carbon NMR verifies our suspicions that are here. Okay. So in this carbon NMR, they're giving me triplet, triplet, singlet. They're telling me how many hydrogens are on each one of these. They're telling me that this signal here is a carbon with two hydrogens, and that makes this carbon into a triplet because of the two hydrogens that are attached to it. And same thing on the next one. This is a CH2, that the carbon is a triplet because of the number of hydrogens attached to it. And that this carbon, whatever this carbon is a singlet because it has no hydrogens attached to it. And this guy with nothing on it, that's my solvent that's at that line. So what I'm getting out of this is I'm getting something at like 22. Oh, should always do this first. NMR, chemical environments. Sometimes I'll just write environments. So the number of chemical environments that we've got, what would we say? Three, yeah. One, two, and three. Solvent doesn't count. So this is three chemical environments. And then we've got our parts per million. Here, they're giving us coupling information, which is telling me how many hydrogens are connected to each carbon. So when they give you that coupling information, it's good to grab that down too. So we'll say multiplicity. We can't integrate, but we can get multiplicity. And then number of H's on the carbon. And then our assignment. So this is, I would break it down this way when they give me that type of information. 24.3, multiplicity triplet, number of H's, two hydrogens that are on that carbon, assignment. This is a CH2. And by virtue of being out of the 20s, or I should say out of the 10s, this is saying that it's got an electron withdrawing group on it. By the time I'm up by 40, I've got a pretty strong electron withdrawing group on it. By the time I'm 45, 50, even 60, that's where I'm starting to get oxygens directly connected to them. So those would be things that would be like alcohols and stuff that would be up here. So these are weaker electron withdrawing groups, but still electron withdrawing groups on these groups. And then of course the carbonyl shows up close to 200 for carboxylic acid. So 38.6 triplet, two hydrogens connected, again, a CH2 group. And then 178.8, a singlet, there's no hydrogens on this. And this is likely the carboxylic acid, the carbon of the carboxylic acid that is up that far. And at this point, what we would do is we would bring all of our pieces of information together. And we would say that from mass spec, we're getting a formula that is C3H5O2Br is the formula that we're looking at. That's 152 MZ ratio. We have 1 unit of unsaturation. We had losses of OH that we found. We found the loss of CO. We found the loss of CO2H. This was minus 17, minus 28. Minus 45. We also had the loss of Br, both 79 and 81, depending upon which molecular ion peak that we looked at. So those were losses as well that we found in there. We that was out of just the mass spec, all the information that we got out of the mass spec. Out of the IR, what we found in the IR is that we had a carboxylic acid. This was both at sort of the 3,500 reciprocal centimeters and also the carbonyl stretch that was at 1753. What the heck was that? 1717. The NMR. The subunits that we came out of this was a CH2 group with an electron withdrawing group connected to a CH2 with an electron withdrawing group connected on that way. We can call one of these one and one of these two. And the other thing that came out of this was that we had this guy that exchanges and out of the sea NMR, oh, and three environments. Out of the sea NMR, we also had three environments. And out of this group, we were getting the same thing, CH2, electron withdrawing group. And then we found the carbon of what we believe to be that carboxylic acid. So putting all those things together, there's really only one way they could go together. And so we would say that this has the carboxylic acid, the two CH2 groups, and the bromide would be our proposed structure. Now, we could take this and we could say, maybe there are things that we should consider to show why other molecules could not fit this bill. So if we were to take all these parts and to rearrange these parts just to question, could it be this? Because these are all almost the same parts, except for the fact that out here, we have the CH3 group. And that there was no CH3 group in our spectrum. So it can't be that guy. Otherwise, it fits with 1, 2, 3 chemical environments. It fits with 3 carbon environments. Fits formula. Let's just do it this way. Let's say it fits the formula. It fits the number of carbon environments. It fits the number of hydrogen environments. It would fit the IR in what we see within the IR. But what it does not do is it does not do the HNMR integration values. Does not fit the HNMR multiplicities, splitting patterns. And it does not fit the carbon NMR multiplicity patterns that were shown in there. So I can go through and I can sort of like say what it fits and what it doesn't fit. The molecule that is on the right-hand side . Maybe I should just do this one more thing here. I would expect this to be a doublet and this to be a quartet. And so that's where it's not matching in the multiplicities for the HNMR. In the other molecule on the right-hand side, this would be a triplet and a triplet because they would be splitting each other. They would integrate for 2 and 2. So this one fits my formula. It fits the number of carbon environments, the number of hydrogen environments. It fits the IR. It fits the HNMR integrations. It fits the HNMR multiplicities. And the carbon NMR multiplicities. And so that's the one that I would go with as being the correct formula. So I've just sort of like broken it all down. How would I go through and track everything and make sure that I've done everything? Okay, so let me do this now. Let me go over here and grab the PDF and take this into Notability. Let's see where it stuck it. right? So I'm gonna have to zoom way in order to see each one of these things. But what we can do is add check marks to each thing. The rule of 13 or the C13 isotope. Did we use the rule of 13? We did. And the number of carbons were calculated correctly. Right. So it's possible that the rule of 13 could have been used, but we were off by a carbon or two. Or it's possible that we were off by two carbons or more than two carbons, but we got it right in the number of carbons. Next thing, molecular weight. Was the molecular weight found? Did we find the molecular weight on this? We did. And we got the correct molecular formula for the structure that we were looking for. Isotope, nitrogen or halogen, X, chlorine, or those things. Significant isotope effects correctly interpreted. So we did that. Decomposition products. A few decomposition products found, few products calculated, however, significant misinterpretations. Some decomposition signals correctly identified, however, minor misinterpretations present, or significant decomposition signals correctly identified with the corresponding substructure. There we were looking at the CO loss, the OH loss, the loss of the entire carboxylic acid group. Also the loss of the bromide. So those are those things. Functional groups. This is for the IR. No determinations made. Some functional groups determined, however, significant misinterpretations present. All the way through, all significant functional groups correctly identified. So we did that in the IR. Notice that the IR has the least number of boxes. The IR only has that one thing. You're looking for functional groups because that's all we're doing in the IR. All right, then we go into the proton NMR. Number of chemical environments. Did we calculate the number of chemical environments for the carbon for the proton NMR? We did. So we got the number of chemical environments. What about the spin-spin coupling? Did we look at the multiplicities and calculate the multiplicities? We did that. Integration values. Did we use the integration values to figure out how many of each type of hydrogen there was? Assignments. Did we make the assignments for what each different type of carbon is or how proton is? And here, again, there's allowances for misinterpretations or all chemical signals correctly interpreted into structural subunits. That's what we did. Proton is similar. Number of chemical environments. Did we calculate how many chemical environments there were within the carbon NMR? Answer was yes. What about assignments? We made assignments in the chemical NMR. We found all the different types of carbon and specified what they were. And we got those correct. And then units of unsaturation. Did we find the units of unsaturation? Yep. Proposed structures. Now here, no structures proposed, a single compound proposed, at least two structural isomers considered, more than two structural isomers considered, all reasonable structural isomers considered. We did two, but there was only two that were reasonable to actually reasonably consider. And so we did those and we analyzed them. Now, structure determination. No analysis completed on proposed structures. Analysis performed on a single compound overlooking major flaws. Analysis performed on multiple structure isomers. However, major inconsistencies between the spectroscopic data and your analysis leading to errors. Or analysis performed on multiple structures, however, minor inconsistencies rather than major ones. So this means that you got really close, but you missed something small. And then proposed structures analyzed to correctly determine the compound in question. So this is why I like the check marks, because it allows you to go back and say, did I in fact consider everything that I was supposed to consider? And did I get to the right spot? Yeah, wow, 4.0. Sweet. So that's what I'm looking for. That's what I want you to be able to reproduce. And it doesn't matter which order you do it in, and it doesn't matter where you write it down. It's like a big Easter egg hunt for me. I go through with my checklist, and every time I find it on a page, no matter where I find it, I check it off. So it's not even like it has to be all grouped together in the same place. I like it if you are able to take the mass spec IR NMR proton carbon and to delineate it so that I'm seeing it easy, so I can just check it all off easy. But if you're doing it sort of this way and just making notes as you go through, as long as you're catching everything, I will find it and I will get it marked off and give you points for it. Okay, so how did that feel going through one start to finish, sort of that way? Not too bad. We've got time for one more. Let's see what we can do. Let's go for number 9. Give me a minute to bring all the pieces into this, which means I need to hide things for a minute. All right, so you can watch me work for a minute. Let's see how fast I can.
On the co-op, do you mind if we use the other spectra? Is it the co-op? Yeah. For the NMR co-op.
What do you mean when you say use the other spectra?
Well, it gives the other spectra there. It's like, can we use the IR and stuff? Would you mind? It's terribly.
Oh, no, absolutely. No, you can go ahead and use that. Okay. I can help you out with that one. Absolutely. I think that, here, let me show. I believe that what BB is asking is that in the NMR cooperative, and you go to organic structure elucidation, I want you to do 33, 49, and 64, do the problems. If you look at 33 has IR and mass spec, even though I'm asking you to work just from the NMR. You can certainly use the IR and the mass spec to be able to help you out with this problem. Although mass spec was only really there to help you find the formula, and they're giving you the formula. So you don't really need the mass spec, but the IR could definitely be helpful in terms of functional groups. So absolutely, you're welcome to use that information that's there that's being presented. Okay. All right, that's not what I want to do. Cascade failure. Okay. Let me go grab the spectra that I need real quick. So, I want number 9. I'll bring in the mass spec. First. IR second. Proton. I'm going to, I guess I'll bring it in twice because there's the detail that I want to catch. And then the carbon, I think I can just grab the 1. Nope, it's going to require a detail too. Drat. So I have lots of information coming in from 9. Okay. Now, if I did this right, I should just be able to send this all to Notability. And 6 files went over. Let's screen share, see what we get. Six files went over and they are in each individual window, which is classic, exactly the way that I want it. But I want my IR. Oh no, it dropped it in the right pitch. Okay. Here's our mass spec. And it got cut off at the top. How is that even possible? It was 206. Nope, no, stop. I almost just ended the lecture session for everybody. Everybody almost just got dumped out. All right, 206. This peak right here is labeled as 206. And this one here is 208. And I just cut off the numbers. So they're about equal in their intensities. So that smells like BR. JC says, this one has another bromide in it. And JC would not be incorrect. This has another bromide in it. So just off the bat, sometimes when you're looking at a spectrum like this and you see things, you just start writing them down. This one definitely does have another bromide. But the molecular ion peak is 206. Isotope, looks like there's a bromide. What's the base peak? Which one is the base peak?
206.
206 is the base peak. What did we say when the molecular ion peak and the base peak are the same? Aromatic, correct. These two usually imply that the molecule is aromatic. All right, what else do we want to do here in this one? Give me tasks. We've identified some of the peaks already. We've identified an isotope effect that seems to be present. Rule of 13 is a good task. So in doing the rule of 13, I always just like to do it this way. 15 times 13, 195. It's just a little bit faster than trying to do it all along division. And then that means that I'm going to have what? 5 plus 6, 11 as a remainder. So that means that I'm at C13, H13 plus 11, which is 24. And then units of saturation once I have the formula. So I agree, I could do units of unsaturation right now. We could look at the IR first if we want. We can go take a look at the IR and see what's there. This was the IR, and we can bounce back and forth. We just need to make sure that we hit everything that we're supposed to hit. So this is the IR. Hydrocarbon with BR. Drew was like, not interesting. So what I do here when I see an IR that looks like this is that I may box it out that there are no alcohols. And I might also box it out sort of in the 1700 range. That's not 1700 range, Jason. That there's no carbonyl either. That none of that seems to be present. And so this looks like hydrocarbon. in terms of the spectrum. There's not a whole lot going on. So that means that really, we don't need to put any oxygens into this. We could be missing an oxygen. We could be thinking, you know, that there could be an ether type oxygen that wouldn't show up as other types. So maybe we want to consider that. But let's go ahead and put in a bromide.
How come you did C13 and not C15?
Because I'm not thinking.
Okay. Okay, I wanted to make sure I wasn't missing something there.
No, it's just me. So that's 27. 15 plus, no, 26. Okay, much better. Because I can make mistakes like anybody else. I'm not perfect. I'm allowed to make mistakes. -3 for Jason. We'll keep track. We'll see how many points I lose over this. All right, so we added a bromine and it was what, C11? What was our last calculation for bromine? I don't want to go back and refigure it. Was it C11? No, C6H7. C6H7. So we're going to get what, 9H19Br? Did I do that right? Looks like it. Something is definitely not happy, however. We'll get to that. All right, so far we've done everything right, right? Keegan, let's see, for quizzes, exams, will we be expected to redraw the different analysis or can we just write out the notes for each? You mean like redoing it the way that I did here? What do you mean, clarify? Oh, if you aren't printing it out.
Yeah, so when I take notes, I'm writing down on normal paper, and when I take the tests and stuff. So, like, would you want me to like try and recreate it to show, like, what I'm marking down for each classification?
No, I mean you're taking notes off the spectra that you're looking at online. You don't need to reprint out the spectra and then take notes on top of that. You can just take your notes according to the way that you would on other sheets of paper. Those are the notes that you're going to photocopy and send in. And I don't need to have the spectra reproduced in any way. That's okay. All right, so is there anything else that we want to do here that we haven't done yet? Fractures or fragments. Yes, BB. Fractures work. I can speak BB. That all works. It's all the same thing. Fragments. So fragmentations, really the only sort of fragmentation that I would consider in this one, because there's nothing in here. I'm aromatic and there's no little things that are in here. This is the next tallest peak. I might consider just going 206 to 127. And that is 79. And that's a bromide. And the only other peak that is really important that I see in here that's helpful is this peak. 77 usually implies aromatic. When you see a 77 peak, the 77 peak almost always comes from a benzene ring that's got a positive charge in it as an aromatic peak. And so that 77 is a pretty good clue that this molecule is an aromatic molecule of some sort when you see the 77. actually, I can't remember this. Yeah, no, that's right. I was going to say tropillium. There's another ion called a tropillium ion, 7-membered ring system, which has a positive charge and is, except I didn't do a 7-member. What did I do? There we go. 7-membered ring system, positive charge, aromatic. This is usually from an aromatic ring with a methyl group that reorganizes into what's called the tropillium ion. And I can't remember the mass of this guy, but it is a C7H6 with a positive charge. So that's 7 times 12 plus 6, 90 MZ ratio. And there's a little tiny one in here that's showing up, but we're not seeing a big one. So these come from benzyl groups with the aromatic ring that will reorganize to form a tropillium ion, which is a really stable ion. So we've done a fragmentation. We figured out the fragmentation with this. And I think that's all we're going to get out of this IR. I don't think that we need to do anything, or out of this mass spec. I don't think we need to do anything else out of the mass spec. We've already done the IR. I don't see any more need to do the IR. Let's do the proton NMR. So this is the H1 NMR. And admittedly, there's not much going on in here. This is probably solvent. Everything looks like this is all aromatic in that range, and we need the detail to be able to get anywhere with that. So here's the detail. So oftentimes when I give you the spectrum, let me show you how I would give it to you. I'll shrink this down. I'll move this down. And I oftentimes put this up on top of it and then try to expand it out and move it off to the side a bit. And I write detail on top of it. And I oftentimes have little brackets that come out that sort of tell me where that detail is showing, so that you're able to see sort of what's going on there. Okay, so this is everything that's going on. First off, how many protons do we have? Just add up the integration values. How many total protons? So what you're doing is you're taking and adding these numbers up here, because these are your integration values and they're giving you good, strong, absolute integration values. So we're getting 7. So that's 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 7 total protons. Number of environments, how many environments are we looking at? Oh, we're missing something. The index of hydrogen, I can't remember what IHD stands for. I never use that term, is 0. Something's wrong. Doesn't make sense with the ring. Yes. JC was having issues with that too. Keegan's going, what's going on? Okay, well, this is why I wanted you to count the number of hydrogens, is because we have 7 hydrogens. How many chemical environments do we have? Let's do this one thing and then we'll go back and we'll resolve this. We have to fix something. So chemical environments, just count what they've integrated. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Looks like 6 environments to me. But it could be different because I don't know what some of these splitting patterns are. So let's say that this looks like it's approximately 6 chemical environments. Okay, now something's wrong. There's 7 hydrogens in our molecule, but up here we calculated that there should have been 19. Something is wrong. Well, if we say that our formula only has 7, let's do this. Let me do it in blue. And we know that we have a bromide. And we know that we have some number of carbons, but we don't know how many carbons we've got. Then what we can do is we can say, all right, bromide is 79, right? And we can add to that the 7 from the hydrogen. So that's going to give me 86. And then 206 minus 86 comes out to, what is that, 120 something? So 206 minus 86, 120. And 120, if I divide 120 by 12, just to see how many carbons that is, that's 10 carbons. So in other words, my formula here could be C10H7Br. And that would be by taking 1 of 12 of the hydrogens away, minus 12 hydrogens, and plus a carbon, converting the carbons to hydrogens. And that would get me at another formula, which now fits my number of hydrogens and has a different units of unsaturation, more appropriate for an aromatic ring system. Did that help in terms of how do I reconcile pieces of data that may not be correct? Because there was no way to know that we weren't going to have C9H19Br. We did everything correct in terms of getting that. But we knew we were having issues. Sometimes when you have issues, rather than getting stuck on the issue, just keep pressing forward to the other pieces of spectroscopy and the issue resolves itself, or at least becomes clear how to resolve the issue. I think that's one of the things that I keep trying to stress is don't get stuck. When you don't understand something, don't get stuck or fixated on that thing. Move forward, come back to it. All right, so I don't know that we finished everything here. In fact, I know we didn't finish everything here. We've got patterns that we need to figure out. Ugly patterns. These two hydrogens, when I look at this pattern right here, I'm seeing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 peaks. Does everybody see the 5 peaks that I'm looking at? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. But do you see the line width right here and right here, which kind of match? Those two line widths match, but that line width in the middle is really skinny. It doesn't match these other line widths. And when I look at the intensities, these intensities look like maybe 1 to 5 to 6 to 5 to 1. That doesn't match with anything. I mean, it looks close to that, to 1 to 4 to 6 to 4 to 1, but not super close. And the line widths are really giving it away. That the line widths are telling you that this is not a pentet. Any idea what that might be then? Given the fact that the line widths don't match, this line width is wide, wide, skinny. These look like two different chemical environments that happen to have overlapped and they integrated them together. And I can't really tell what they are from what this is looking like. but it's looking like there is either a doublet and a triplet that have landed on top of each other in some way, or some other pattern going on here, but it's not a pintet. And so what I'm going to do with this is I'm going to call it 7.25. And I'm going to say, I don't know what it is. I've got...
How many points do you lose for that?
None. Because you can't tell what it is. You don't lose any points. It's two hydrogens. This is two separate environments. I don't know what it is. I don't know what the multiplicity is. It's a multiplet. And I have no idea what it is, but it's aromatic. In fact, all of these are all aromatic. And so there's nothing in here that's not aromatic, which is really kind of helpful. Now, this one is nice and clean. This one's a doublet. This one is nice and clean. This one's a doublet. These, I don't know what those are. And that one's a singlet. So I've got some that I can identify and some that I can't. And like I said, don't get stuck. Just say question mark for every peak and move on, right? Sometimes that's the way it goes. 7.3 doublet. This was one hydrogen? Yeah, one hydrogen. It's a doublet. It's got two neighbors, or one neighbor, it's aromatic. These are all aromatic. 7.48 is a doublet. It's aromatic. 7.5 and 7.58. One hydrogen. I don't know what this is. It's aromatic. And my last one, which is the singlet, which is really nice. When you get a singlet in the aromatic range, that's always helpful. 7.78. One hydrogen, singlet. And aromatic. And I'm going to make note of this, that I've got a singlet, because I'm going to come back to that. I'm sure that's going to become important. When you get a singlet, it means that there's no other neighbors around it. And it can really help you identify possibilities within the aromatic ranges. All right. I'm not going to get stuck on things that I can't resolve. So I'm going to take and look at the carbon NMR. This one has a detail that I blew up and brought in with it. And so that's a blow up of that carbon NMR spectrum so that I can get all the values that I need off of it. Okay, starting the table, we have the number of carbon environments. This we should be able to get a little bit easier. There is the 119, that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and 10. I've got 10 carbon environments. And then after that, we're making a list of the parts per million and the assignment. And with these 10, we've got 119.4. We've got 128.2, 128.8. I said that wrong, didn't I? 126.2, 126.8, and 126.9. We got 127.8 and then a bunch at 129. and then 131.7 and 134. Something like that. And all of these, they're all aromatic. This one presumably may be aromatic with an electron withdrawing group on it. But all the rest of those are just aromatic. And so what's nice about this is that with 10 environments and 10 carbons, our formula was C10H something BR. Shoot, memory's failing me. H7. The nice thing here is that the number of environments and the number of carbons are the same. And that implies that there is no symmetry. Because all of them are showing up. And because all the carbons are showing up, none of them are dropping out. That's helpful. Okay, so we've pretty much done everything except calculate the units of unsaturation. Did anybody calculate the units of unsaturation? So it's C10 H7BR. For saturated, that would be 22. For saturated, we've only got, actually not 22, 21. For saturated, we've got 7. So that's 14. That's 7 units of unsaturation. 7 units is a lot of units. And it might be hard to figure out how to put this thing together. Any ideas? Aromatic molecule?
Two rings connected. Or aromatic rings connected.
Yes. So when we connect aromatic rings, the way that we connect aromatic rings is this way. Making sure that we don't put two bonds together. So now this would equal C10H8. But we know that we have a bromine in there. So what we've got is we've got a situation where presumably there's a bromine in this molecule, but we don't know where. And we need to figure out how many different places we can put the bromine. And then we need to figure out which structure is correct. So there's only, I think, unless somebody can show me differently, I think there's only two places where the bromine can go. It can go here, or it can go here. And then everything else is just a rotation of one of these two orientations. So if I take the bromine and I move it down here, that would be the same as this just flipped over. And if I take the bromine and I move it down here, that would be the same as this one just flipped over. And if I put the bromine on the left-hand side and I rearrange the bonds, then I have one of these two configurations. And so these are the only two possibilities. Now, I need to figure out which one of these possibilities is the right one. So what do I look for?
The singlet.
I knew that was going to come back and be important somewhere. The singlet. Okay. Let's take and do an analysis really quickly. These two are going to couple. These two are going to couple. These two are going to couple. This is going to be a doublet, a double doublet, or a triplet. I don't know which. This will be a doublet. This guy will be a doublet and a doublet. But this guy up here, that's the one that's the singlet. And these guys out here, are the same for both sides. So there's nothing that's on this left-hand side that is going to help me discern, because the left-hand side over here is going to be the same. And this would have been a doublet, double doublet or triplet, double doublet or triplet, and then the doublet. And so it's this right here. That helps you decide which one of those is right. And that's the right molecule. So what was all that splitting pattern in the proton NMR? It was a bunch of things just dropping on top of each other. It's really hard to see and tell. These patterns here are not doublets or triplets. It's a double doublet. This is a doublet, and this is a doublet, and these two are so symmetrical that this is probably a double doublet, and then a really big doublet that's sitting in here in some way. That these guys, they're integrating for one and one, thankfully, but this is not an easily identifiable splitting pattern that's happening in here. So it's a system of double doublets in some way. This guy here, this was probably two triplets that overlapped. And the way that the triplets overlapped made the pattern that you're seeing that is this funky pattern. It's this singlet that becomes important. And that's the most important peak in the entire spectrum, is that singlet, because that's the thing that you can pick out that allows you to be able to differentiate between these two patterns down here. So this is the other lesson. This is an important lesson. You don't need to identify everything. You need to identify the important things and be able to figure out which spectrum is which and find the thing that allows you to differentiate, that's the word that I want, differentiate between the two spectrum. That's the important thing to do. So the two biggest, I guess, let's see, three big lessons. Number one, use the rubric as a checklist so that you can check off all the things that you need to check off. Make sure you're hitting all the things you need to hit. Number two, don't get stuck when you can't identify something. Don't be afraid to put a question mark. Number three, you don't have to identify everything. You just have to be able to differentiate between your options when you get down to the final options, and that all your pieces of data need to coincide and say the same thing. Okay, those were two good examples and some pretty good lessons today. And it was kind of fun to see how we put all of it together and how they all mesh together in order to be able to figure out what the structure is. So, all right. How about questions? How are we doing? No? Came together okay today? Looks like it was feeling better. Most people were, there was a few oh shit moments here and there, maybe, or oh no moments. But other than that, it seems like it went pretty well. Okay, let's call it quits here. I'm gonna go give my back a rest again, and then I'll be back online at 3 o'clock for the afternoon lab. And yeah, I could see you losing your mind when you were getting 0 units of unsaturation, but that's, sometimes you need to remember that the number of carbons and hydrogens can be sorted out by looking at the integration within the proton NMR. That tells you how many hydrogens there are. You can use the hydrogens to work backwards to figure out how many carbons there should have been. Or we could have used the C13 satellite peak, and I could have given you the percent abundance of that, and we could have calculated how many carbons from that. So there's multiple places to get those pieces of data so that you don't get stuck. That's nice to remember as well. So you can always check those pieces of data.
Jason, I kind of did have an NMR question.
Okay.
Just generally, if you have something like and the only thing that I can bring to mind is like keto enols that tautomerize.
Yeah.
Well, if you have like a rapidly interconverting species and you're trying to pop that in NMR, at some point, like, are you going to get weird spiking patterns in your NMR because it's tautomerizing? Like, will you get like weird hydrogen environments that are coming out of a tautomerization, because if it was an enantiomer, you'd just get the same NMR. But if you have something that's rapidly interconverting, right, how would you approach that?
Okay. Okay, so what happens is they're in dynamic equilibrium and they're not rapidly, they are rapidly interconverting in that you're dynamic equilibrium, but your ratios, once they reach dynamic equilibrium, don't change. So the ratios get set. What happens is in the IR, something like a ketone that has some enol component to it, you will see the carbonyl spike, you'll see the ketone, you will also see some alcohol nature to it that will not be as prominent as an alcohol if it were all alcohol, but you will see a small amount of hydroxyl being present, okay? In the NMR, what you would see is that when you integrate the hydrogens, you will see that you will get some small amount of what looks like an exchanging alcohol peak, but won't integrate for a full proton. It'll integrate at a lesser amount. And most often the NMR person analyzing it may do the exchanging experiment and may decide that it is telling you that it is an enol because or it looks like a contaminant, that it's too small to actually be part of the whole molecule. And so it typically winds up being ignored in the NMR, but is more visible and more prominent in the IR. And we just sort of view it as a contaminant.
Okay, cool.
But it can help to inform the structure, because as soon as you realize that you're getting a ketone and that you may have some enol component to it, all of a sudden it starts making sense why you're seeing it.
Right, that makes sense. My next quick thing was just that maybe considering like a conformational isomer where it's kind of hard to just, because like sometimes there's like long, like 7 or 8 carbon conformational isomers where they lock themselves, you know, kind of like almost to form a ring, but they're straight chain. So are you going to get like an electronic interaction that's going to confuse your NMR now?
Yes. But it's not an electronic. What happens is, particularly with hydrogen bonding, you will see certain like 1,5,1,6 diols configure into a 6-membered ring system
through
hydrogen bonding. And there the NMR does get complicated because it becomes a rigidly bound ring system. The protons then start to be chemically inequivalent and will show up as individual signals within the proton NMR. That happens all the time. And there are some problems like that in both of the spectroscopy databases that we're using as problem sets, but they wind up in the advanced problems, not in the beginning or intermediate problems.
Thanks. Yeah. I have one more, but I'll save it for later. So.
All right. Sweet. Sounds good.
Cool. Thanks, Jason.
Good question, Sterling. Thanks.
Thank you, Jason.
Thank you, guys. Take care, BB. Take care, Mary.
Bye.